In October 2020, two brothers began recording a podcast about the horror movies they love. All things seemed successful till they vanished in March of 2021. Now they have returned, the same, yet somehow different. You're listening to Horror Brothers. Welcome back to Horror Bros. That's right. I'm your host, Jason Johnson, along with...
We're back, baby!
Yeah.
JT Johnson.
That's right. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. We're gonna start this thing back up, albeit a little different format than what we originally decided upon. But all those episodes are still out there, so if you want to go listen to them, go check them out. Should be some good content there for you. But
yes,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
To explain to the six people who are returning from the first show.
That's right.
and for new audience members who may go back and listen to the old ones. In the old iteration of the show, we were going to do seasons. We're going to do 10 episodes set in a certain decade, about 10 movies from said decade. Well, COVID kind of went away, and... we kind of had to return to our normal lives. And also that format was a bit restrictive because there were times where we would be, you know, in a, like the 70s. And I'm like, I really want to talk about this movie, but it came out in the 90s. You know, we were
right.
I'm trying to hold myself to the format. So the new format is Jason and I will both choose a movie for us to watch. Like I'll watch a movie. He'll watch his movie. We'll have the option to watch the other person's movie, but we'll just have two movies. So it can be two wildly different movies. I did notice, coincidentally, both of our films today were released in the same year.
Yes. Yes.
But that'll be the new format. And I was thinking, though, before we jumped into our movies, that if this may not be something to do every week, because we may not have something new to talk about every week with horror films, but that we can maybe talk about, maybe we saw a trailer or casting news or even talk about a movie that is out now that we don't really want to spoil. We'll just kind of give a brief spoiler-free review. And I thought a way to kick this one off, since we've been off the air for a while, is I looked at 2023, and I have three recommendations for films this year that I don't quite want to discuss because they're either just been out in theaters or still out in theaters in some cases.
Right.
And so I chose three films. This is not a rank. Thing. This is not like a top three. This is just three films I'm recommending from this year. The first one is Megan.
Yeah.
From January, which, yes, is kind of like a modern update of the Child's Play story, but it's got this great theme about how much do you use technology to raise your kids? And
right. And
what happens if they become dependent on the technology and don't want to listen to you because you have them on their iPads and your iPhones. It's kind of a cautionary tale. There are two versions of that movie on Peacock. There's a theatrical and the unrated and an unrated version. I've only seen the theatrical, but I really enjoyed it when I watched it. The second film is Evil Dead Rise, which, by the way, I went into with the highest amount of skepticism one could go in to a movie. Because it's like, it's not Bruce Campbell. It's different.
Yeah.
But when you watch it, it actually does modernize the formula. It's gory as hell, as an Evil Dead film should be.
Right.
And I had a real blast with it. And I said I didn't rank these, but out of the three I'm talking about, this next one, Scream 6 is my favorite horror film so far this year.
Oh, yeah.
Really great. Actually set in New York. I'm sure a lot of it was shot in Vancouver. Yes, I know. But still... It's at least they're not on a fucking boat, Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
They're
they
in...
actually gave us the Jason Takes Manhattan we wanted.
Yes. And I do like that a character is watching Jason Takes Manhattan. Like they're very, I love how meta the Scream films are. But
right.
That is my favorite. I did forget about a movie that I just now thought of, The Boogeyman. which is based on a Stephen King short story. That was also pretty good too. It's
I'll
a little
have to check that one out. I know about the other three. I've seen Scream 6, and which is an amazing movie, and everyone should see it. And then the other two, I'm waiting right now to watch them. I know Evil Dead Rise just came out, but The Boogeyman, I haven't heard of this one.
Yeah, it has that girl that played Leia in Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
And it's her and her sister, and there's this thing in the darkness that you can't see. It's in the closet, you know, under the bed and all that kind of stuff. It is a bit of a standard movie, so that's why I didn't think about it until just now.
Right.
But I did enjoy it. It's a good little horror movie to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have anything else, go ahead and do it. I actually almost said Smile for this year, but Smile actually came out last year.
Yeah.
But that was a good one as well. But there's some recommendations for me of more recent films that maybe at some point in the future we'll talk about. I even thought about, like, maybe we should set a rule that the film has to be at least a year old.
Right.
Now, the two films we're talking about today are less than a year old. But I got to thinking about that just for the sake of spoilers. You know, we can at least say, hey, this movie came out a year ago. So if you hadn't watched it by now, it's on you.
Yeah. And which, honestly,
we're going to spoil the fuck out of our films.
Well, honestly, I'm avoiding spoiling mine. I can, but yeah, I some of these movies. Yeah.
Well, the only reason I have to spoil mine is because of I have to talk about why half the fan base hated it and half the fan base loved it. So
right.
I have to kind of give it away. This is a thing where, like, maybe at the beginning we will give a spoiler alert before we talk about our movies, because yes, we got to talk about them. I don't want to be restrained, like, oh, I don't want to mention that for spoilers.
Right, you know? Right. But yeah.
But that's the new version.
Well, speaking of your movie, and half the fan base hated it and half the fan base loved it, we are in the half of the fan base that absolutely loved the film. I know that because I've talked to you about it before. Go ahead,
absolutely,
man. Let's jump into this thing.
So I was going to ask, you want me to start with my movie?
Yeah, let's go ahead on.
All right. I'm going to give a few facts about it before we get into the discussion, too. My movie is Halloween Ends, which came out in October of last year. Director David Gordon Green, writers Danny McBride, David Gordon Green, Paul Brad Logan, and Chris Bernier. The music is done by the original Halloween director, John Carpenter, his son Cody Carpenter, and his godson Daniel Davies, who is the actual son of guitarist David Davies from the Kinks.
Oh, I'll be damned.
This is the final part of a trilogy from director Green. The first film was, of course, 2018's Halloween. The second film was 2021's Halloween Kills. You don't need to see any other sequels beyond that, because this trilogy retconned all the other sequels. This is the requel that the recent Scream films talk about, which is a film that is a sequel to the original and just reboots everything else.
Yeah.
What I found impressive about this film, though, is when I watched Halloween Ends again for this, it was a pretty good standalone movie, even though it is continuing and ending this trilogy. It is the final film to feature Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode. Andy Matichek returns as Allison. Will Patton returns as Frank Hawkins. And James Jude Courtney returns as Michael Myers. The new addition, and the divisive new addition to the movie, is Rowan Campbell, who joins as Corey Cunningham. We'll get more into him in a minute.
Yeah.
The only other thing I have is that each film in this trilogy, this is what Green was a genius at doing. He gave each film in the trilogy a theme. Halloween 2018 was about trauma and Laurie living with this trauma that happened to her 40 years prior. And the second film is on the same night, Haddonfield finds out, and it's about mob mentality and vigilante justice. Right. It's my least favorite of the three because they're a bit heavy-handed with their theme.
Yeah.
If I hear Evil Dies Tonight one more time, I'll punch a hole in the wall. the theme for this movie, though, is it fast-forwards 4 years after into the present, and it's Michael has been missing. They didn't catch him. He's missing. And the town is afraid. There's a foreboding fear, kind of like a virus, which I don't know where they got that theme from in these recent years. But this kid, Corey Cunningham, 3 years prior, has an accident, but it's on Halloween night. He accidentally kills a kid that he's babysitting. And so the town looks at him with anger and disdain, because they and it slowly drives Corey mad until he finds Michael Myers, and they kind of join forces, and Corey kind of becomes the new boogeyman of the movie. And that is the divisive trait of this movie.
Yeah.
The film focuses on Corey Cunningham. He is the de facto main character. Laurie Strode, after Corey's encounter with Michael, she sees him and she sees that evil in his eyes. So she starts to suspect him. She's actually on his side at first, because she knows that the town is maligning him falsely for for what was a genuine accident.
Much the way they maligned her for what her, you know, what
for,
she went
for
through.
Her association.
Yeah. With Michael Myers.
I actually like where we're at with Laurie in this movie. In this movie, she has decided my trauma led to the death of my daughter. Me trying to go after this guy ended in disaster.
Yeah.
It ended with this mob being destroyed by Michael. And so I'm going to try to move on. I bought a house. I'm living with my granddaughter, trying to be there for her. The only thing I will say I don't like about the movie, though, is they do try to force a relationship between Allison, the granddaughter, and Corey.
Yeah.
And it does not work. It felt more like they were trying to figure out what to do with Allison in the movie.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't have as big a role as she did in the other two. The rumor before this movie came out was that this is, for me, what the step too far would have been. The rumor before the movie came out was that they were going to reveal that Michael Myers died in between movies.
Yeah.
And that Corey was going to be the copycat the whole way through. Like, he finds Michael's body and gets his mask and all that stuff.
Right.
If that had happened and Laurie's final battle would have been with this fucking copycat, a la Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning.
Yeah.
I would have been pissed. But Michael and Laurie do have their final battle.
Yeah.
Because Corey eventually fucks up and screws over Michael. But,
as we all know, you don't do that to Michael
Myers. You don't do that at all. And another thing I like about this movie is the ending. The final battle in the kitchen between her and Michael, it's brutal, but it's quick, because she quickly overpowers him.
Yeah.
And I like it because she sees for the first time, and she's saying it to him, I have lived with the fear of you. I have lived being angry at you. I have lived wanting to try to forgive you somehow. I have lived with this fear, and you're nothing more than a man.
Yeah.
You're nothing. You're not this evil. Yeah.
You're not supernatural. You're not the boogeyman. Yeah. You're just a guy.
I mean, you're strong as hell, and you can kill and take a lot of damage. But you're human at the end of the day.
Right.
And another thing I love about this ending, it is a fucking ending. David Gordon Green gives no wink winks. He's coming back. Setup for another movie. They fucking destroy him and take his body to a goddamn industrial shredder.
There is no fucking way they left it open at the end. Which I love They did, you know, they came out with these three films. They said these are direct sequels to the very first Halloween film. This is going to tell the story as a whole. And then they announce right after it's over that, yes, this is it. If anybody else wants to take up the mantle for this, have at it. But we're done. We have made the definitive set of four films that make this that begin and end this.
I love the scene. They're carrying out his body, and there's been this sheriff that's in the films. I can't think of his name, but he's the one that wears the cowboy hat.
Oh yeah.
He shows up And one of the deputies is, as they're carrying the body out, one of the deputies is like, this isn't how we do things. And he just goes, it is tonight. Yeah. After he experienced what he experienced 4 years prior.
Right.
Yeah, the movie, like I said, a lot of fans and critics hated it because it was different. And what bugged me about that was the year prior when Halloween Kills came out, these same fans were complaining, oh, it's just Michael Myers stabby stabby. They didn't do anything with it.
It's just like, more of the same.
Yeah. And then, so they do Halloween Ends and they're like, it's too different. It's like, what the fuck do you want? Like,
well, it's
the 13th film in a franchise.
It suffered from the same thing that the third Star Wars trilogy did, where you give them the first movie and they said, oh, it's just a retelling of New Hope. And then you give them the second film, which they're going to finally take it in a different direction. A cool new direction I would have loved to have seen. But nope, that's too different. And so then you end up, and this is why I'm glad this movie is the last one, because you don't end up with what, unfortunately, we got in the other, in that realm where the studio execs sit down and say, well, fuck it, let's just read all the blogs, find out what they want, and give it all to them in the last one. And hopefully that'll shut them the fuck up, you know?
Toxic fandoms are more prevalent these days because they have access to the internet.
Right.
I think the studios though are finally learning, like, don't listen to the internet. It's the worst people on the internet.
Right.
Except for us on Horror Bros.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, we're talking toxic fandoms where quite frankly, and quite honestly, toxic fandoms, don't really realize that, I'm glad they are not writers. Because they would be the hackiest, most bullshit writers on the planet. I perfect example is the second film in that trilogy where I really would have liked to have seen where that story was going. It just got completely ruined by the fandom doing what they did.
It also didn't help with Star Wars that they didn't have someone in charge of the whole thing.
Right.
Like they piecemealed it together with various filmmakers. The thing I love about this trilogy is David Gordon Green did all three films.
Right.
And so there's a consistency to it. In fact, one little Easter egg, if you watch the 2018 Halloween, it has on the opening credits, it has the same font that they used in the opening credits for the original film, that orange font. The second film, Halloween Kills, has the slightly altered font from 1981's Halloween 2. And in Halloween Ends, it has that basic blue font from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And all three films came out 40 years after the films that they're paying tribute to.
I'll be damned.
It was 78, 81, and 82, and this one was 18, 21, and 22.
Yeah.
So, nice little Easter egg there. But no, this is one of those films, I love it, but for the very reasons people don't like it. But I do have a prediction. I think this film will eventually be appreciated by the fandom, much in the same way Halloween 3 eventually was.
Yeah.
It'll be years from now, but I think the fandom will come on board because they'll really see what it was about instead of, I want to see Michael Myers stabby stabby. I think that'll be the case. Oh, I had someone joke with the joke with these films is that in the 2018 film, Michael Myers would have been 61. And in this film, Halloween Ends, he would have been 65. So congratulations, you made retirement age before the end.
Yeah.
But I told this person, I said, yeah, you know how that doesn't matter. He's played by James Jude Courtney, who is the same age as Michael Myers. He was 61 in 2018, and he was 65 when he made Halloween Ends. He's a stuntman.
Yeah.
And so you hire someone, and you say, no, look. The stuntman is his age. So.
Yeah, just because we've gotten older doesn't mean we're dead.
Yeah, and Nick Castle makes a cameo in all three films, but in this one in particular, he makes a cameo. You see his face. He's one of the costume goers at the costume party. He's the one that has the beard and opens up his coat to reveal one of those organ, like one suits that has all the organs mm-hmm. painted on it.
Mm-hmm.
He's that guy. So he did, because I think they filmed a cameo with him as Michael, like, because there's a shot in Halloween and in Halloween Kills. In Halloween 2018, it's the shot where Laurie looks up and sees him in the mirror and shoots at the mirror on the second floor of the house. That's Nick Castle. That was his in-costume cameo. In Halloween Kills, I think it's been confirmed that when he's standing there at the window at the end, that is Nick Castle's cameo, I think. I could be mistaken on that, but I want to say that was what I read. But so, yeah, they continue that trend. Another thing I love about this movie is Jamie Lee Curtis, man. I never thought in my wildest dreams that we would get her for a trilogy of films. I thought when she said she was coming back for 2018's Halloween, I was like, well, there we go. We're going to get a one and done final Laurie Strode performance, which I would have been totally cool with. And then they announced these two films and she rocks it in all three films. She's not used as much in Halloween Kills because she's wounded, but yeah, that's kind of why I have issues with that movie. I don't have enough Laurie Strode.
Yeah.
But Halloween Ends, though, she is so great because, yeah, she's great as this, like, I'm moving on, I'm writing my memoirs. But when she sees that evil in Corey's eyes, she goes to that house where he goes because that's where he killed the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he goes in there, and there she is leaning back in a chair, and she's got that I'm a badass motherfucker vibe going on. Like, she's putting on Laurie Strode survivalist mode.
Right.
And they have a good little final confrontation before Michael shows up at the end too. One thing of note is Rowan Campbell as Corey Cunningham, which, by the way, another Easter egg, his last name Cunningham is in relation to Archie Cunningham from Christine, which was directed by John Carpenter. So
I'll be damned.
Another Easter egg there for you. And he kind of has a similar descent into madness that Archie Cunningham has in Christine.
Right.
He starts off as this weird kid young man that everyone thinks is a loser. He's bullied. And he's finally bullied into just going nuts. Now, Christine helps corrupt Archie. But someone could say that Michael Myers helps finish the corruption of Corey. So,
yep.
The deaths in this movie are pretty gnarly, but there's not as many as there are in Kills. They scaled back for sure.
Yeah.
I think the gnarliest one was the DJ, where he goes in and slams his head on the counter and just crushes his face, and his tongue is stuck on the record player, causing the record to skip.
Yeah.
That was probably my favorite kill. His secretary, who Michael Myers kills before him, is actually Darcy the mail girl from Last Drive-In.
Right.
With Joe Bob Briggs. So there's another little cameo. The only thing I would have liked to have seen more is Will Patton returned as Frank Hawkins, the luckiest survivor in the fucking world, because he was thought to have been killed in the 2018 movie, and they brought him back in Halloween. They revealed he lived in Halloween Kills, and he's in a couple of scenes, and it's left with this beat of Laurie's going to start a life with him now that Michael's gone. She's going to resume their romantic life. But I just don't feel he's in it enough. I wish he had been in the movie a little bit more. Right. And actually, he's not the luckiest survivor. The luckiest survivor is the woman who had the fluorescent light bulb shoved into her throat, who comes back in a wheelchair in this one.
Yes.
Which you said something funny about that. It's like she's a comedian and like a very loud comedian. So it's hilarious that they took her voice away.
Because if you remember correctly, you know, in the second film, she was, you know, very loud and very boisterous. And then in this movie, of course, because of what Michael did to her in the second movie, she can't speak. and it was funny to me because in real life she is very very vocal and very loud as a stand-up comedian. But yeah, so overall, love this movie.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I've been talking at a certain speed. I'm getting back into the groove of this thing. Yeah, what were your thoughts on the movie?
Oh, I love it. I absolutely loved it. I like where they were taking it. I love how in the movie they start to kind of piss you off, because I was getting a little pissed that they were going to go with Michael was dead and this guy just decided to take up the mantle.
And they let you carry
that throughout a lot of the film until they do reintroduce Michael. And then it goes in directions that you don't think it's going to go, and has an ending that, again, I love because it is a true ending. There is no coming back from it, and is somewhat surprising. I loved the movie. I loved every bit of it, you know.
My big fear was that they were going to give it a wink, wink, this isn't over ending.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully they didn't do that.
Mm-mm.
I agree with you. Like, yeah, until he meets Michael in the sewers, I was like, oh my God, this theory is going to prove to be true.
Yeah.
And, but it ends up not being. I also like how Green hints that Michael Myers is supernatural, but never flat out states it.
Yeah.
Like, there's the point where Corey looks into Michael Myers' eyes and Michael Myers looks into his eyes, and it flashes to all the bad things that have happened, him killing the kid by accident and some of Michael Myers' kills.
Right.
And it's almost like Corey's being ultimately infected by the evil that is in Michael. And I like how when he brings that cop for Michael to kill, when Michael kills him, he starts to shake and like he's getting stronger. And you can take that, but your interpretation of it, you could take it that it's something, oh, wow, when he does kill people, it does make him stronger. Or you can take it that he's having an adrenaline rush.
Like, yeah, it could just be something that's entirely explainable.
To the groove.
Well, and the thing is, too, is one of the things I did like about this film is they do give the character Corey some kills to where he is bad. There is no doubting he's bad and all. But then, you know, Michael shows up and says, yeah, leave that to me, buddy. I'm the bad motherfucker of Haddonfield, you know. Yeah.
Well, the thing with Corey is a tragic character. This is where Campbell's performance is great. You like him at first.
Yeah.
You're on his side. But he has to do a 180 heel turn, and that's not an easy thing for a performer to do. And he did it pretty flawlessly, because by the time I needed to hate him, I hated him.
Yeah. Yep. 100%.
But
Well,
before we, I would say we can rate both the movies together towards the end.
Let's do that. So, and I'll go ahead.
Let's get to your film,
I'll
sir.
Go
what
ahead
did you
and
choose?
Go here. Well, I, you know, went with an A24 film, which, of course, A24 to me is just having a hard time having misses. You know, they gave us Beau's Afraid, The Whale, Ex Machina, you know, all those great movies. But then this one kind of got past me, and I think it was just because the pandemic was over and I was heavily into doing stand-up and I wasn't really paying attention to movies come out. But the movie is X. And I'll tell you, it's directed and written by T. West. It stars Mia Goth, Brittany Snow, Kid Cudi, under his actual name, Scott Muscutty, and Martin Henderson, Owen Campbell, and Stephen Urey. And there's a few others in there, most notably James Galen as the Sheriff with the cowboy hat. That's become a trope here recently. You got to have a sheriff with a cowboy hat, and guys, something went goddamn bad in here. You know, it's always something like that. I'm going to go ahead on and say, loved this movie. to give you an overview.
Before you go on, I was a little I was a little concerned.
Yeah.
When you said this is your movie, I didn't want to influence you, so I was like, "Oh, cool, yeah. You chose X," because of how slow the movie is.
Yeah, it is slow. But it's to me, it was paced just right. It adds this creepy factor to it, and it's even slow enough that from the beginning of the film, you're thinking, "Well, this is the way it's going to go," you know, these people are the evil people and all, but it goes so slowly and builds that tension so much that you start to think, well, is it not them? Is it going to be something else? And then, you know, and then, of course, it all goes. But anyway, a little bit about the film. Set in 1979, adult movie actors and a small film crew arrive at a farmhouse occupied by an elderly couple in the desolate Texas countryside. They're going to film an adult movie there. Of course, it's 1979, so they're there to get rich off the backs of movies like Beyond the Green Door and Deep Throat, you know, because this was the height of the porn popularity. So they're just going to go, they're going to make their movie and get paid. But the problem is they go from the daylight while they're filming and everything's all fun and good. It turns to night, and that's when all hell breaks loose. I loved it, though. And I'll tell you why, because there is it has it all for me. It's an homage to films I love in the way it is filmed, where it is set, and everything. And then it is also, there is an underlying theme to this movie that some people aren't going to notice, but others are, especially if they look at the way things are going today in this world. But as far as the homage goes, I love where it is set, because where this they say the desolate Texas countryside, but it's a farmhouse. It's an old farmhouse out in rural Texas, and it is such an homage to the old farmhouse out in rural Texas for Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, it has that look of the 70s exploitation horror film, which, of course, you can't, you know, get past that look once you have, you know, the big afro on Kid Cudi and the Farrah Fawcett hair on all the girls and all that jazz, you know, just the standard tropes. But I just love it. Go ahead.
And what kind of surprised me about this movie is I didn't know how much I was going to like the characters, to be honest with you, at first.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I like these characters. I actually don't want to see them die. And so when it starts to happen, there's an impact there. And so he took some characters that are, let's face facts, often seen as deplorable because,
right,
they're porn stars and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
But no, he humanizes them. And,
well, they're typical,
and of course,
70s.
Jenna Ortega.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I haven't mentioned her yet.
Golf.
And there's a reason why. It's, I want to do a whole thing about how much Jenna Ortega has become one of my favorite new people in this world. From Wednesday to the Scream 5 and Scream 6 role to this, I just love her in everything she does.
Once the actor strike is done and they can finish the movie, will be seen as Lydia's daughter in Beetlejuice 2.
Yes. And I love her to death. I think she's a wonderful actress. I'm loving this lane she's taking where she's kind of doing not just horror, but kind of this goth thing. You know, Wednesday's a cute little show about this goth chick, you know, of course, famously from the Addams Family. And then she's Scream, of course, is just a franchise that's legendary.
She is definitely,
and she jumps into that perfect.
Yeah, she's definitely a successor to Scream Queens. Like,
Nev
Campbell and Jamie Lee Curtis.
But also with her, I could definitely see her jumping into roles outside of horror very easily. She's just got that perfect girl next door, you know, look to her where she could do so many different types of roles, you know.
I think she'll pull a Curtis where she'll step away from the genre for a while.
I really
do, too. In order to try to break out because she really can. another person that's kind of become something of a scream queen is Mia Goth, who's really the de facto main character.
She is the main character of the movie, yes, and in two different ways, oddly enough. Because
which
she plays Maxine, the main porn star.
Yeah,
and she also plays Pearl, the evil old woman.
Go ahead and tell you, I did not know when I watched this for the first time.
Yeah.
I did not yet know, and I was kind of like, why is the old couple played by younger people in old age makeup? Particularly,
right.
Why is Mia Goth Pearl?
Yeah.
And then I found out there's this movie that they released called Pearl that Ty West shot while he was making this movie secretly.
Yeah, because, and this is one of the things I was going to bring out about this is, so basically, one of the things that happened was during the pandemic, he was in a forced quarantine for 2 weeks in New Zealand. And while he was in that quarantine, he just decided to sit down and shit, I ain't got nothing better to do. He wrote a sequel to X. He wrote Pearl, which is about the old lady from X, who is played by Mia Goth also. And when he got it written, he sent it to A24. As soon as they saw the script for Pearl, they greenlit it before production even began on X. And he asked them, Mia Goth, do you want to just stay in New Zealand and film a sequel to this before we even start? And that's the reason why, and so they kind of filmed simultaneously, and that's the reason why the sequel came out in the same year as X. Is because it was a product of a COVID-19 quarantine issue, but apparently this guy's a great writer, because as soon as they're seeing the scripts for this stuff, they're not even saying, oh, you know, make us a test. It nothing. They're just saying, yeah, do it, dude. Whatever you want to make, you know.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Who is the old? Is the old guy also played by the actor who would play that? Guess that character in Pearl.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked up Pearl to tell. I'll tell you right now. That's going to be my next movie.
I need to see it. I haven't seen it.
I was so impressed with X our next episode. That's going to be my next movie. Because I don't want to go ahead on and just do it and get into it. He's definitely young enough. He was also a younger actor in makeup, to do the movie. But man, the creepy factor, once it does get started and get rolling into the murders and stuff, man, they are brutal. And they are creepy. Basically, and this is the underlying theme of the movie, which I love to death. I love this theme of this movie, is that this old couple, they've rented their guest house as the place for them to film their porn movie. Of course, the old couple doesn't know that's what's going on out there and all, but of course they figure it out pretty quick. But the old woman is there, and she is looking at them, and she's reminiscing. She tells Mia Goth's character at one point, "I used to be a dancer," and it basically what it boils down to is about how the bitterness that older people get because maybe they didn't get to live their life they wanted to. They didn't get to have this freedom that they see in the youth. And how the youth are able to go and do whatever they want to because they do have youth. You know, it's that whole thing of youth is wasted on the young. type of thing, you know, and I don't know what this next goddamn generation's gonna, you know, that whole thing, you know, which I hate. I 100% hate it when older people, my age and above, sit there and this next generation, you were the same fucking way when you were their age. Remember where you came from, you dipshits, you know. And but it deals in a way with that theme, and it deals with it in a very drastic way, where
as horror does,
yeah, as horror does, where Pearl is wanting them to do certain things, and then when she gets turned down, Pearl gets very pissy about it and proceeds to kill everybody. like I say, it's a great film. I loved it. I loved every second of it. But
totally speaking, I would say this film is on a trajectory of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
100%.
You hang out with the group for a while,
right?
And it slowly starts to escalate. And Pearl is basically this film's Leatherface. She's the one that's gonna. She slowly kills off a couple of them, and then it just escalates,
right?
More than more.
Yeah, and then let's see here. Here's something neat. And this was in the. I went and checked the IMDb for it out, and I went to the trivia section. Of course, this is something neat I didn't know. So of course we all know where the X rating comes from. The X rating comes from years ago. They decided that there were certain movies that were coming out that the R just was not enough for. It needed to be the movie needed a rating that said only people above the age of 18 should see this movie. And, you know, we had some really famous films come out under the X rating. You know, we got A Clockwork Orange, we got Midnight Cowboy, Last Tango in Paris.
And you had legitimate porn films in the 70s, like Deep Throat.
Yes, like. But here's the interesting way they got the X rating, because none of those porn movies were put out for an MPAA rating. That none of them, what they fail to do is what people don't know is R, PG, now PG-13 also, and G, and now NC-17, because NC-17 came about later. Those have all been copyrighted by the MPAA. No one else can use those as their ratings, because they have actually been copyrighted. They failed to copyright X when they put it out. And so all of the porn movies started just, well, hell, it's not copyrighted, and obviously this is supposed to be seen by 18 and above, so we'll just make all our movies X-rated. And it became so ingrained with the porn industry that X was porn, that's when they had to come out years later with NC-17, which, of course, no children under 17, and they don't even use X anymore, which NC-17 is trademarked, and it cannot be self-applied to a movie, so the porn industry was unable to take that from them.
By the way, those un-American commie liberals in Hollywood,
yeah,
it's now just the Motion Picture Association. They dropped America.
Oh,
it's just
them
the
bastards.
MPA now.
Them bastards.
I don't know why, but yeah, a couple of years ago they dropped the. I noticed it was saying MPA, and I was like, "What the fuck?" And then yeah, they changed it. They did it silently too.
I never even heard that.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh no, you're fine. Oh, goddamn patriots over there in goddamn Ella. Goddamn it. Anyway, yeah. No, but I just thought that was a funny little thing that, you know, that it was them actually trying to, but then the porn industry said, yeah, fuck it, copyright it next time, dipshits, you know. And but other than that, you know, it's so funny. Some people have tried to come out with this movie and talk about how, you know, it's nudity and all that jazz and it's exploitative of these girls. No, it's not. Brittany Snow talked about it in several interviews where, you know, of course, this is a movie about people making an X-rated film. Nudity is going to have to be in it. She didn't mind it. And it said it was almost an exercise in her feeling confident about her body. And she was pretty proud of it.
believe it or not, some women are confident with their bodies.
Yeah.
And it's okay. They think it's fine to do a nude scene, and it's no, and oddly enough, no issue with it.
And oddly enough, those people who had a problem with that, that's what this movie is about in some ways. The people that look down on people who do things like that and try and make it a naughty, evil, bad thing. and in doing so, become evil themselves. So, yeah, no, but no, I love this film. Like I said, it's my next film that we're going to, I'm going to review on the show is going to be the sequel to this because I want to see it so bad. Because I just, I thought this film was wonderful. A24 is hard to admit. You know, we both picked films. I picked an A24, you picked a Blumhouse. And honestly, we've talked about this several times on a personal level in our conversations. Man, talk about a couple of places that are getting it right. Micro-budgeted films that have a big pop and are just and are really well-made films. You know, a lot of what A24 is putting out is reminding me of the independent films of the 90s, where they're putting out well-written, well-made films, but on a budget. And so they end up making good money.
You're getting solid indie art house horror with A24.
Right.
And Blumhouse feels like New Line from the 1980s.
Yes.
Which, that's what New Line did. They had micro-budgeted movies, and it was the house that Freddy built. They did the Nightmare series.
Yeah.
And so...
And you were just...
That's how I feel about both of those. Yeah.
You were just commenting on this, too, because everyone's screaming that Indiana Jones isn't going to be a success because it hasn't made all of its money back and all that, Jess. You want to make all your money back, and if that's the only way you're going to judge the success of a film... Stop making $300 million movies.
Yeah.
Make a $20 million movie that's going to make you $100 million back. You know, that's success in your world.
They need to go back to their studios, need to go back to their formula where, yes, you have two or three tentpole movies that, yes, you can spend $100, $150 million on. You know, Top Gun Maverick ain't going to be cheap.
No.
But it's not $300 million. That's the thing.
Yeah.
They shot Top Gun Maverick for 150. I think the range has been between 150, $170 million. And that was them shooting with the Navy, where they had to pay for everything. So you and me, taxpayer, wasn't paying for it.
Right.
And it's a huge, massive production. And that's a damn fun blockbuster movie. And then you can make micro-budgeted horror films, help micro-budgeted comedies. Comedies used to not cost much.
This new movie
with Jennifer Lawrence, No Hard Feelings.
Yeah,
that's a $30 million movie, and it's going to be a solid hit.
Right.
And
that's the thing though too is comedies are going to be tough these days because it's just comedians are so afraid, and I have heard big name comedians.
Yeah.
Talk about how the day of the old comedy film, your Adam Sandler films, for instance, that's a good example. Even your Will Ferrell films, those days are over because as soon as that film is released, they're going to find something wrong with every joke in it, and it's going to be a nightmare as far as social media is concerned.
Well, the irony is, Jason, I don't get why they are focusing so much scrutiny, the moral police out there, on comedies. But right now we're going through a horror boom.
Yeah.
Usually during times like this where we're on our moral high grounds, horror films don't do well.
Right.
Because they, you know, oh, they're violent and gory.
They have gratuitous nudity and all that jazz. And Jesus doesn't like it.
But yet the horror films, everybody's watching, and the comedies, they're not. Real quick, we will be talking about a third and final film in the X trilogy, as Ty West is shooting Maxine with three X's.
Oh, wow.
It's
going
to be set in the 80s. Mia Goth is coming back as Maxine, and it will also feature Giancarlo Esposito, who people may know from Breaking Bad as Gus Spring.
Hell yeah.
And Kevin Bacon, returning to horror.
No shit.
Yep, Kevin Bacon will be in the movie as well. That's awesome. All we know about it is Maxine sets out for fame and success in 1980s Los Angeles.
That's awesome.
I know they started filming earlier this year. I don't know what the status is of that right now, with the actor strike putting everything on hold.
Yeah, everything on hold. Actors and writers, man, they've thrown a kink in our new films, and good on them. I'm proud of them. It's about damn time that somebody figured out that streaming is killing people with as far as the money they make.
I'm hoping, well, not only that, but I'm also, another goal that I hope that these strikes do is show the studios, rein this shit in.
Yeah.
With these big budgets. I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, but yeah, almost had a heart attack when I learned that it was $300 million to make that movie.
Right.
I do think budgets will level out for one reason, though, because part of the reason some of these films are costing that much is they were delayed by the pandemic, and so their productions ran longer than they normally would have. But that being said, it still should have been $300 million.
Right, right. Yeah, it's these budgets have just gotten outrageous for these blockbusters, and especially, you know what? If you told me the next Avengers film is $300 fucking dollars, $300, that'd be great. $300 million, I'd be like, yeah, okay, it's going to set up even more. You know, this is just going to be their money maker. That's fine, I get it. But Indiana Jones, we know this is the last Indiana Jones film. You cannot reboot it. You cannot go do anything else with it, because that's just one of those characters that is Harrison Ford. And that's it. And, you know, and Harrison Ford is 80 years old. This is done. So you're dumping a lot of movies into keeping an IP going that, quite honestly, just can't keep going, you know? Yeah.
And I'll give you another good example of an exception to the rule that could have a big budget. Here recently, I saw a writer was criticizing Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Yeah.
Criticizing its budget for being like close to $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
But and thankfully, the people in the comments also echoed this sentiment. I went, hold on. That's a budget for two movies.
Right.
They shot two movies back to back.
Right.
And so that's $150 million per movie, per blockbuster. And it's two blockbusters.
And you're going to get blockbusters. Those have been steadily some of the best films in Hollywood over the years.
This movie is going to easily be a huge hit, and then you're going to have another huge hit. So you can justify that budget for that exception. But if you're making another blockbuster for the summer, keep it to 100-150 million.
Yeah,
none of this shit is that expensive.
And start looking to younger writers, these people who are hungry for it. They've written new and exciting stories, like X, you know, or something like that, that you can make for cheap and is going to be good. And you're giving this kid a chance, you know?
Well, I think that's what the A24 films we're starting to see with those films, and what we're starting to see with Blumhouse. This kind of is our next emerging independent wave of films. And that may be where another benefit of the strikes comes into play.
Right.
Because afterwards, Hollywood's going to want to save some more money. So they'll start making smaller movies. But hopefully the important thing with the strikes, of course, is better deals, particularly for the writers. I do support the actors' strike as well, but particularly the writers. Writers have been screwed over for years. They've always been the lowest people on the totem pole, and they shouldn't be. They're the 100%. Ones that give you your ideas, and they should be compensated for that. Now, one thing I will say is that studios need to figure out how to make streamers profitable, for one.
Yes.
That is one problem. That's why they're restructuring and rescheduling, and, you know, they're purging stuff is because, but then again, here's the problem. Secret Invasion is on right now with Marvel, and the budget for that show was revealed to be somewhere close to $300 million. That's the price of that's the price of Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that high.
No.
Even if you're paying Samuel L. Jackson $20 million. Yeah. That's just $20 million.
Well, and also I think you may be talking about the thing here too is that, you know, I think anything Marvel right now, anything with that IP is just going to be super expensive because of the fact that you have every major actor in Hollywood. You have all of the highest paid actors for that. They didn't do anything about going out and finding, oh, here's a young new person you haven't ever heard of. No, they just said, fuck it. Here, let's see. You're the high. Oh, okay. Here's $20 million a film for the next six films. Let's go ahead and do that. You know?
Well, I will say, though, if you look at these new crop of actors that they've pulled for the new movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like for Shang-Chi and Kamala Khan, the girl who plays Kamala Khan. Notice they aren't going for names.
Right, yeah. They are starting to bring in young actors and new actors and putting them in these roles.
Bob Iger's also said that he wants to scale back on the Marvel TV stuff as well.
Right.
And focus more on the films again because they're starting to see we put out too much too soon.
Right.
Like we flooded the market. And they did, man. There was a point where I was like, I don't want another Marvel thing, man.
Yep.
Like, I just saw a movie and then a TV show, and then another TV show, then another movie.
But what kills me about this is, and this is where, you know, I'll wrap this up with here about this, is that from the dawn of the horror film, horror has saved Hollywood. You have the old Universal horror films. Universal was going to go under, and then they started doing Dracula films, mummy films, all that, saved their asses. Then you come up into the 80s. There were, you know, well, 70s and 80s. There were a lot of studios that were going to go under and not do, Paramount being one of them. And horror saved them. And yet, it happens time and time again. Here we are in modern day Hollywood where the micro-budgeted horror film is showing the studios, look, this is what you need to do. It doesn't need to be horror. It can be comedy. It can be a drama. It can be whatever, but micro-budgeted. And which is sad that $20 million is a micro-budget. But anyway, we'll get into that later. I'd give anything for $20 million. But time and time again, horror has been the genre that shows these companies, you know, or saves them or shows them the path forward. And time again, horror is always put down as, well, that's just schlock. I don't want nothing to do with that. You know, it's just horror movies. And I, God, it kills me every time that this happens.
I will say one good thing about the horror films we're getting today.
Yeah.
Is that I will say a lot of critics today are more favorable towards them.
Yeah.
And I think it's because people like Jordan Peele and John Krasinski, Ty West, Ari Aster,
right.
I think I said that name right, are making thoughtful horror films. They're not really making schlock. And then when someone does make maybe a more schlock film, they're at least doing it with love and care. And thankfully, the critics today are like you and me. They grew up on this stuff.
Right.
And so they see it for what it is. You know, that was the thing. As much as I love my favorite film critic was Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
And but he hated the horror genre. He thought it was very hard to get him to like a horror movie. He liked the big ones like Halloween and The Exorcist and Night of the Living Dead. But then a lot of others he just shot down. He's like, schlock, you know, B movies or whatever. That's why we're glad we had people like Joe Bob Briggs back in the day, repping these films.
Right.
But now we see the genre for what it is. And it's going to ebb and flow. We're, you know, we're going through a high point right now, and with movies coming out, and it'll dip again, and then it'll come back. That's the greatest thing about horror films. Just like their evil antagonists, they always come back from the dead.
Right. Yeah.
But on that note, now that we finally circled back to horror, because we kind of went off on budgets and all that. And,
yeah. Well, I mean, it all comes back into it, you know. It just does.
Yeah.
But yeah. So on that note, though, are you ready to rate these films so we can let these people go so they can watch them?
Yes, sir. I give Halloween Ends 4 out of 5 kitchen knives.
Nice, nice. And for me, Halloween Ends gets 4 out of 5 alt radio stations with pissy DJs, which has become a thing in some of these movies.
Yeah, there's always a DJ who somehow still has a job in the 21st century.
Yes, yes.
And for Maxine, I will give it 5 out of 5.
X, X-rays. Not Maxine. X. Maxine's not out yet.
Or X, yeah.
Yeah.
For X, I give 5 out of 5 X ratings.
Yeah, and I'll give it 5 out of 5 NC-17s. fuck you, MPAA. I'm stealing it from you. Anyway. thoroughly enjoyed both these movies. I think they're great. And like I said, so impressed by X that next week I'll be doing Pearl. How about you?
Okay. Next week, I am not entirely sure just yet.
Yeah, more to come.
It's cool. I have options now.
Yeah,
we're not on a list.
Oh yeah,
we. I'm gonna look through my collection. I will say this. I can give this much. I think I do want to go further in the past. I want to get maybe a classic fun horror movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What I'm gonna do.
Yeah.
I know what I'm going to do. Just discovered it right here while we're recording.
Awesome.
Going to do Night of the Creeps.
Awesome. Awesome.
That's going to be my one.
Yeah, after I get done with Pearl, I think I'm going to go back in time a little bit myself. It's always fun to do that some. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to watch Pearl before as well. I'm going to watch both movies because I haven't seen Pearl yet either.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fun doing this, man. I'm glad we decided to bring this back and do this. It's always a pleasure to talk with you about films. Of course, we've been it since you were born and I was about 9 years old. So, but yeah.
It is good to get back into the groove of it because for anyone who doesn't know, I used to be a freelance film critic. I now just write little mini reviews for my friends on Facebook. I haven't really done anything
right
film criticism wise or film reviewing wise, and I got to get away from the writing anyway. No one pays for writing, so
yeah, tell me about it.
I gotta get the voice out there. So and I've been wanting to bring this back. You were the first one to bring it up. You said a friend of yours asked you about bringing it back.
Yeah.
And I coincidentally been thinking about it. And so when you said we should bring it back, I was like, yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah,
I gotta do something.
Well, I'm glad to be back and I'm glad we're doing this.
Yeah.
And anyway, until next time, everybody, love each other and you know, watch out for old ladies with pitchforks.
and watch out for troubled young men who team up with psychotic evil.
Yeah,
he's just evil.
There's no explaining him. He's Michael can't be explained. Anyway, goodbye everybody.
That recording in 2018's Halloween, you have to kill him.
Yeah. All right, everybody.
All right, guys. Later.